Mormon Stories Podcast takes a ton of work and depends solely upon listener support. To keep this program alive, please consider a donation today at mormonstories.org.
There's a question that I put up on Facebook. I invited people to ask you questions right when I started this interview.
I should have looked.
No, it's okay. I'll pass them on to you. None of them are real curveballs. But one of the questions that people asked is, what do you not believe? And so I guess we've covered a lot of them. But is there anything else in the LDS tradition that you definitely don't believe? Or are you just going to say you're open to everything and you don't want to, you know, disbelieve anything because you want to remain open?
A little bit what you just said there. I mean, I try to keep the door open a crack, you know, and I have done a lot of thinking of where something like, for instance, I don't really think that we had a council in heaven and Satan presented a plan and Jesus presented a plan and, you know, and that this, you know, we all, you know, those of us who came down here chose this way and the third of the host of heaven are now banished and, you know, they're the reason that we sin and feel tempted and all that stuff. I don't believe that at all.
Okay.
You know, I would maybe less than 0.5% that there really is probably a being named Lucifer.
Okay.
You know, or, you know, something. I think it's far more powerful to, you know, look at that archetypally as, you know, you know, safety. You know, it seems to me, you know, people aren't saying, I'm going to follow Satan because he is such a compelling guy and all that. But no, what's going to rally them is the idea that I'm guaranteed salvation. And if it means, you know, not really having a lot of agency or whatnot, as long as I can get back here to what is known, you know, in my life here, I'm going to go with that. You know, that's more representative to me of an attitude or, you know, a kind of a temperament that some people would have. And then there's others that say, you know, I recognize that to get anything good, I've got to earn it. I somehow have to go through a testing. I've got to go through a fire. I've got to, you know, make it really a part of myself. I can't just have it be, you know, I can't just follow a forced path.
Sure.
And so again, that's like a story. I could talk to the council in heaven in Sunday school and feel authentic because I would concentrate on various aspects of it, but without believing that it's a literal story. I think it's far more powerful to think that we're capable of choosing against our own best interests than it is to think that some devil is constantly tempting us. You know what I mean? I'm afraid of my light. I'm afraid of the responsibility that comes with spiritual growth of that way. I'm afraid that I'm going to be taken out of my comfort zone. If you look at the Fowler stage 5 to stage 6 transition, it's that letting go of the consequences. I'm still too, you know, me, myself, I'm still too chicken crap. You know, I want to say, I'm, you know, there are certain things that I'm, you know, okay, God, I kind of feel that you're calling me, or the universe, you're calling me to take that next step and to grow in this way. But guess what? I'm too afraid of the consequences. I don't want to go down that path, and so I won't. And so those are, you know, those are the kinds of things and motivations that I think come along that we'd say, oh no, it's Satan trying to keep me back. It's me being afraid. And I have to conquer that, and that's a challenge. And
okay, what any other things you don't believe?
Oh, you know, I don't know. Yeah, I could see this, you know, what you're saying here, and sort of the way this is all probably adding up for listeners is the way it adds up for a lot of my friends who I engage quite often on, you know, why I'm still active in the church and why they're not. And they're basically saying, well, the Mormonism that you believe in is so, you know, so flaky and not what all we hear in general conference and all that stuff, that it doesn't feel like real Mormonism to me. You know, that's what they're saying. And I'm going, well, guess what? I think I'm just focused on the true invitations that are within Mormonism to have experiences that say, grow, become more loving, you know, have experiences with God, have experiences with your true self, this expansive being that you are. I don't know, somehow or other, that is just to me, the heart of Mormonism, you know, Fowler talks about every religion is aiming you towards stage six, but every one of them is centered as its center of gravity on stage three. Jesus is calling, the kingdom of God is within you. You know, all the traditions are basically telling you to step into full power and full, you know, acceptance of the divine being that you are. And yet, you know, our churches don't emphasize that.
Right.
So I don't know that I even did.
No, that's fine. So it wouldn't be fruitful to go through another laundry
list of what I don't believe in, because whatever I do believe in, I probably believe in at an archetypal, you know, level. You know what I mean? That's the gist of the universe that I think is true. That's kind of it. You know, I can see that we're all interconnected. You know, rather than we should be welded through priesthood ordinances in the temple. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
that kind of,
so. Right. So are there elements of Mormonism that you sort of extricate yourself from or remove yourself from for matters of integrity? So I'll give you an example. There's some people who wouldn't feel comfortable answering the temple recommend questions the way that they're supposed to be answered if they saw things the way you saw them. So they could say, well, I'll just go because it's good and because it's spiritual for me. But the temple recommend questions clearly are asking some very specific things. And, you know, many would say, even on the restoration, you've articulated a very different view of the restoration that the very few bishops or stake presidents or general authorities would say, you know, qualifies in terms of the litmus test. So I'll start with the temple recommend questions. Are you comfortable having a temple recommend and answering all the questions given how you've framed your faith?
It's going to probably surprise you that I would say yes. because I'm trying to think of what's going on in that temple recommend question. That is it's a place where you basically declare what? You declare that you are LDS, that you assent to certain really pretty broad statements. Believe in the restoration. Do you believe in God, Jesus? Do you believe that church leaders are, you know, all those different things? I know what you mean. And I know lots of people that say my integrity can't, you know, it's too much mental gymnastics to go through, you know, how do I frame this in order to say yes? Somehow or other, I just the way I'm comfortable inside the myth and the way I'm comfortable outside the myth, and I don't really feel inauthentic in either one. To me, the temple recommend question is a chance for me to reflect on, do I value the truths that the temple points to, which I do. You know, I have lots of really cool thoughts and feelings about the temple. I want to go. I feel edified when I go. I don't know. I don't know that a whole lot of bishops and stake presidents, the way that a lot of people think, are looking for you to articulate it in any terms of anything other than assent or not that you feel worthy to worship with your community and willing to take upon, you know, covenants or promises, whatever that means, you know. I don't know. I haven't done a good job there, but I guess my answer is, you know, if any bishop or stake president is listening to this or listens to it in the future, you probably will want to yank a recommend from me if you can't see past what I'm saying. Oh, we're getting a little echo there. You know, I love the truths of the gospel, and I think a lot of them are taught at the temple, and I'm grateful for the temple, and I want to be there, and I would hope that this bishop or stake president would see that in the integrity of my heart. I'm following my journey and interpreting truths according to my experiences, and they have pointed me towards valuing it at a deeper mythic level than the literal level that maybe the temple recommend questions seem like they're being asked at. So I want to go. Hopefully they'll agree. I've had a couple of, you know, stake presidents or bishops say, you know, the only thing that matters here is if you sign the recommend yourself. That's the important thing. It's your integrity that's at stake, not my job as a judge of Israel, you know, to say whether you're worthy to go to the temple or not. If you say that you are and you feel like with integrity of heart you should go, then go. And I guess I would say that I feel like I could do that. I could sign that recommend myself.
You know, that's the vibe I've gotten from almost every bishop I've ever interviewed with, is it's just up to you. If you want to judge yourself worthy, judge yourself worthy. If you don't think you're worthy, you know, judge yourself unworthy. You know, I've never felt this sort of, now, do you really believe this?
Yeah, all right.
Never.
Yeah, I don't think they want the 15-minute, you know, gymnastics for you to tell them, talk them through why you can say yes. Yeah, they, you know, so, yeah, it's so interesting that, yeah. So maybe a lot of people scream, this guy has no integrity because his Mormonism is so out there and so fringy and stuff like that. And yet for me, it's like, I really think I'm in the center of the true call of the gospel to, you know, to grow and love and serve and, you know, all this stuff is, I've centered on that stuff. I've gotten through the crap, you know, just to kind of get back to the place where I'm going to embrace the opportunities that Mormonism provides for me for these bigger things. So I feel super central to Mormonism, but yet I recognize that on that rhetorical level, on the level at which, you know, a lot of talks are given and a lot of, you know, be safe within the fold and all that stuff goes, you know, it just completely doesn't, I don't know. That's not me. That's not my Mormonism for sure.
Huh? I could hear some cynical listeners saying, well, with the mental gymnastics that you've taken, Dan, you could probably feel good about drinking beer and drinking wine and answering the Word of Wisdom questions in a way that you can feel comfortable with. You know, I could even hear people say, Dan, you've redefined every word, every term, every piece of doctrine. You've deconstructed and reconstructed to your own liking every possible thing such that everything means anything you want it to mean and nothing means anything that would be recognizable to a traditional Mormon. So, would it go that far? Would it go that far that you could drink beer and wine and still answer the temple recommend questions or pay your tithing to charitable organizations outside the church, not pay it to the church, but still answer those temple recommend questions? Like, are there limits to your flexibility?
Really good. I don't think that if somebody were to drink beer or wine, it's, you know, you can't feel the spirit, you know, et cetera. You know, in other words, God withdraws his spirit or something like that. For me, those are markers of being within the community or whatnot. So certainly I don't drink beer or wine, you know, don't smoke, don't use, you know, drugs, whatever. I follow the Word of Wisdom other than I'm fat.
But you're cute. But you're cute.
Yeah, I'm a teddy bear. So I don't do that because I'm Mormon, not because of some spiritual reason. So if I were to say, you know, the temple is Mormonism's highest, you know, the place of its highest expression. And it's so interesting that when you go to the temple, it has nothing to do with Joseph Smith or, you know, any of these doctrines. You know, it has to do with this stuff that I have centered, you know, my spirituality around, the things I find compelling. Those are the things that are in the temple. So in other words, I would not lie and say, you know, I live the Word of Wisdom when I don't, you know what I mean? Same thing on tithing. You know, it's basically, yeah, I may I may choose, you know, I may not like it, but I don't know. That's that's an interesting question, John. You know, there's the whole 10% net gross. There's all of a sudden, what is your increase? And so there are, you know, I didn't like your say, talk about I'm doing mental gymnastics.
Well, I don't want to
look at that because I don't sense that they're mental gymnastics, because to me, they flowed these perspectives that I think I've kind of settled in on. They kind of flowed naturally out of the spiritual experiences I had, the invitations in the scriptures that I've heeded to have this experience or that experience or whatnot. So somehow just those things become so much more important to me than, you know, the articulate, the level at which sometimes gospel principles are articulated in church. So there's that aspect of it. But tithing, no, I would pay my tithing to the church to get a temple recommend. Yeah. I wouldn't claim to be, you know, worthy of a temple not worthy. I hate the worthiness part of that, but I wouldn't expect to enter the temple without paying tithing to the church.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I just want to make sure I wasn't calling what you're doing mental gymnastics. Sincerely, I was just saying.
You said skeptical among the listeners.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, I have respect for you and for where you are and what you're trying to do. And
well, to step away from Mormonism just for a second, there, you know, what is religion? To me, every religion is inviting somebody to say, here's an experience. Here's the experience. If you want to have this experience, do this, 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 and this, and you will get that experience. Now, you won't get it like automatic push a button, but you'll step in. To me, the this, this, and this that you do for it, it puts you in a position to where, I don't know, you step into that experience, you have released enough of your own personal expectations, your investment in how I look, how I feel, you've gotten rid of your fears or whatever. And so you sort of just are ready to experience this, you know, deeper stuff of the universe that sort of is the animating core of religion. So what happens, obviously, and I think there was a good post, Andrew Ainsworth, I think, in the podcast community over the last few days, posted something about religion being built up, you know, around a spiritual core, but then the man-made stuff comes along, and pretty soon, you know, the man-made stuff overpowers the spiritual, you know, core of the religion. And Buddhism has this great phrase that says, you know, the finger points at the moon, but we can't mistake the finger for the moon. So in other words, the church should be set up to point you towards having these spiritual experiences, you know, and we're not just talking about emotional experiences where you cry on your testimony, you know, it's pointing you to say, you know, see God, you know, have the entire, you know, what's the oath and covenant of the priesthood, you know, receive all that I receive. Kingdom of God is within you. All those different things that it is saying to do. And so we build up this theology and this man-made structures that, you know, start, you know, small and whatnot, but, and they're pointing at this experience, but pretty soon, guess what? They're just that finger that points to the experience, but people are forgetting that there's the experience out there, that there's the moon, and they only see the finger. Does that make any sense? I didn't.
Yeah, no, that's good. That's good.
So Joseph Smith's theology, basically, to me, you know, when it all nails down to is, and it's not Joseph Smith's theology, these are his key insights. This is what I think is going on in the universe. The universe is inviting us to grow and to align ourselves with its powers, its potentials, etc. And here are pathways. Here's our ways of thinking about yourself as a divine being or something that would encourage you to take that step and to follow those injunctions and have these experiences and transform your soul and have your character shaped and totally grown. You know, there's this great phrase that, you know, the universe is a place for soul making. You know, expand your soul. That's what the gospel of Mormonism is. I think that's the gospel. That's the truth at the heart of Buddhism. I think that's the truth at the heart of so many of these traditions that basically say align yourself with the powers of the universe. And that's the purpose of things. And so any of the trappings that say, you know, God, you know, every time you sin, it is just so much harder for God to forgive you. You know, the next time you got to work that much harder to be forgiven. You know, those kinds of things just, they feel so ridiculous to me. You know, if it is true that it's harder to be forgiven of your sin next time, guess what? It has nothing to do with God. It's because you've re-ingrained the habit. You know, you've got your momentum going again once more of something that you'd been struggling with, and you gave into it again. So guess what? All the habit and stuff there. God forgives you every single time. You're forgiven before you even repent, in my opinion, or something like that. So any of these things that kind of take you away from that core insight about what religion is all about, I'm perfectly happy to reject. But, you know, how do I act in church meetings? I don't take it on head on. I find myself often being, it's kind of weird, I get solicited, Brother Weatherspoon, what do you think about that? You know, or something, which is kind of a neat thing that some people have valued some of my perspectives. But I just always tend to say, you know, there's two ways to look at sin. There's the, you know, we're violating God's law, or we're harming ourselves, you know, somehow or other, you know. And so I'm able to kind of say that. And both things are within the scripture. Both things were in there. You mentioned once before something about my doctrines and whatnot. Every time I share something that I have, I've never had anybody, you know, kind of challenge that's part of Mormonism. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think we all know that these are there. It may not be the most emphasized parts, and it may be like, oh yeah, wow, I'd forgot about that. We probably hadn't had, you know, that brought up for 6 months, you know, in church. But nobody's like saying that, oh, you're way outside of Mormonism.
Right.
When I do it. But again, it's sort of, I guess, a way that I've learned to negotiate my way through church to, you know, I'm not out there to deconstruct the stories, and I'm not out there to tell all the different things that you're sort of asking me, what I don't believe.
Yeah.
You know, I've just found ways to positively reinforce the things I do. And I think sometimes, and especially I know that it happens. Everyone else, a month later, someone will say, as Brother Weatherspoon was pointing out, you know, when we had that lesson back there, I've really been thinking about that. And somehow or other, you know, I know that somehow a perspective gets shifted. You know, what I think is a positive way, maybe, you know, maybe it's not, but, I don't know, but somehow or other, I feel welcomed within my ward. I'm sure I make mistakes. I'm sure I've scared the heck out of some people from time to time. But for the most part, I think most people recognize that what I'm saying is at least in the gospel.
Right. I mean, and how do you avoid feeling just like church attendance on Sunday is a complete waste of time, especially Sunday school and elders quorum? And how do you avoid getting angry when you hear people say things that are tedious or boring or in violation of your values or ethics, or that are just demonstrably false historically or otherwise? How do you go to church and not want to rip your eyes out?
Well, I would say probably once a quarter, I do want to rip my eyes out. You know, there'll be something that somebody says. I had a phrase that I used for a while there, and I don't use it anymore, but it's popped into my brain here, so maybe I ought to say it. But it was like, you know, I really have an easier time liking my neighbors if I didn't know exactly what they think. You know what I mean? and so every once in a while, you know, you'll see somebody and say, oh, I really thought that person was, you know, had thought at a different or a deeper level than that. And obviously they're struggling, you know, to me, they've got a very, you know, 101 kind of, you know, view of religion and what a blessing is and all that stuff or whatever it is. And I'll kind of feel sad. But on the other hand, I do try to keep in mind that doesn't define that person 100%. That's not the only thing about that person. You know, this is the guy who, you know,
yeah,
you know, is helping his neighbor every frickin' day, you know, with, you know, he's the one that shovels the walk or something. And then I also have to consider that, I mean, it's so interesting. I've met enough people that, like, they've bugged me. And then you just get to that point where you know their life story a little bit more. and you know how they were raised, and you've met their parents or their siblings, and you get to say, they're not to blame, you know, for this way of thinking. Or, you know, if I was abused as a child, I might have a very different view of God. You know, God would not be a loving father to me if my father was abusive. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so if they're going to give a theology that I don't like, you know, maybe I ought to cut them some slack because of their life experiences and whatnot. I mean, I just met so many people that just like were not enemies, but just people I just like, oh my living heck, who this later became friends just because I went to church and I got to see other parts of them, or we took the time and we had a 10-minute conversation and whatnot. So that works there. But you're right. There was a lot of times in Sunday school, a lot of times in priesthood meeting, that you just go, this was a complete waste of 45 minutes. Once a month, great priesthood lessons, because I'm teaching them. My wife and I, for the last year, taught the marriage, you know, the marriage class, you know, for people who wanted to get out of Old Testament. You know, so there were a lot of people that were escaping Sunday school and coming to ours. And so we had good experience, you know, teaching that 8-week course and rotating through different peoples of the ward. So that, you know, in other words, I got out of it for a while. Prior to that, we were 2.5 years teaching the 10-year-olds in primary. So, you know, in some ways I haven't had to face what you're talking about too much, but you're right. I have Sundays where I just go, wow, this did not uplift me. But on the other hand, I've grown to love so many people. We are in such a great ward where, you know, I just feel so blessed where we're at right now that, I feel fully in.
Right. Right.
You know, and I'll put up with a bad week, you know, every once in a while.
Do you ever get the feeling that, given the church's stance on Prop 8 or on gay marriage or on inequality with women or whatever, or the investments in the multi-billion-dollar mall, that your money could be better spent on more meaningful, worthwhile causes, or that your time, even though church can be bearable or even enjoyable sometimes, that maybe your time could be better spent elsewhere, time or money better spent?
Yeah, I think I'm sure I think that from time to time, for sure. Prop 8 and, you know, being behind the curve, like you talked about in an earlier question, and, you know, we seem to, you know, we seem to emphasize certain, you know, you didn't bring this up, but, you know, we focus on sexual morality while we let, you know, women and children, you know, we don't do anything about the AIDS epidemic, or, you know, in other words, what is true morality, you know, war or, you know, sexual chastity, you know, that kind of, you know, we miss the mark in so many areas like that. But I don't know, I do see the church making progress. Things are moving generally in the right direction. I do think Prop 8 was a setback. You know, there's this great line from Joan Chittister, who's a very outspoken nun. She's a, you know, feminist, kind of the leading person. She, you know, she's the one that sits on all the world councils of religion and whatnot, representing, you know, Catholic nuns and whatnot. And she's this wonderful person who says, this is her perspective on things. She says, you know, I think what we're seeing right now in a lot of the churches, you know, in the Catholic Church isn't super forward on a lot of things, she says, is the seeding of the question. In other words, we're just seeing the question being asked more and more and more and taking root and, you know, growing up, you know, organically within our traditions or whatnot. We're seeing the seeding of the question. And then she kind of says, I don't know how many snowflakes it takes, you know, piled on a branch, you know, until that branch will break or till, you know, it'll give way or something. But she says, I want my snowflake to be one of the ones that contributes, you know, to that time when, when we do see the movement. You know, it's like, I want to add my little weight, you know, to seeing these things there. And in some ways that maybe feel like a cop out, and it may be like, oh, everyone, Dan Witherspoon says everyone should stay in the church to be, you know, cause you can work harder from the inside or than from the outside or something like that. I really would want to emphasize that I do see the church moving and growing, and every, you know, it might be generational, but I do think that even sometimes, you know, people in the older generation that aren't so experienced with people with same sex attraction and, you know, all that stuff, you know, homosexuals and whatnot, I do see movement. And so, you know, you can't force people's minds. You just have to be patient with it and add your two cents. And so, I don't know. I just, maybe that just came out wrong, and it's pretty late. But
no, it's good. So in your mind, could God call someone out of Mormonism as easily as he could call them into Mormonism?
I don't know if God would call you in or out. I know God will always call you to growth, you know. And I think if Mormonism is damaging you, you should get out. You know what I mean?
If it's really you, that doesn't mean you're lame or weak or condemned.
No.
You don't see.
I hope if you leave, you leave really having experienced the best of Mormonism. You know what I mean? If you've never really had, you know, these powerful experiences that I have had, you know, that came within Mormon context, even though I absolutely can see them as, you know, as being experiences that simply came because I put myself in a situation, you know, a frame of mind, you know, a humility, a willingness to grow, a willingness to hear an answer that I might not have otherwise heard, you know, all those different things. It doesn't mean that Mormonism is true because I've had spiritual experiences that come within Mormonism. But I would hope that if you're going to leave Mormonism, you're leaving a robust version of Mormonism, you know, rather than just a weak one. But on the other hand, if Mormonism is damaging to you, you know, and you've really tried to see the sand and not just the cat crap, you know, God would probably say go.
Right.
But I hope you just don't go into, you know, I'm now going to, you know, quit thinking that it's important for me to grow and to serve and to love and to challenge myself. You know, don't go just to collapse the, you know, yeah, it'll help you improve your disposition if you collapse the horn of the dilemma or the arm of the paradox that's causing you the most pain. You are going to feel enlightened and unburdened and whatnot, but don't think that that's a final position. In other words, if you get out of Mormonism, keep listening to your heart, because I do think the universe is always going to cause you to want to, you know, it's always going to call you to growth. And so, yeah, you could be growing in some other tradition. And, you know, I look at Carolyn Tanner Irish as somebody I really admire. She was the Episcopal bishop here at Utah, you know, O.C. Tanner's daughter, definitely within the Mormon fold, you know, who absolutely, I would take her counsel any day. You know what I mean? She's that powerful and you know, an inspired a person for me that I would really seriously consider, you know, her wisdom at any point. So I absolutely think God worked with her in a path outside of Mormonism.
Well, Dan, that's I think you've made about as compelling of a case as I could imagine for I don't know, a rich, complex, nuanced, but still, you know, committed view and approach to Mormonism. So I've really enjoyed your answering my questions.
Well, thanks. And it's been fun and it's been weird because, yeah, if you only heard part of this podcast, I imagine all people would hear is no, I don't, you know, and whatnot. And I hope that the other parts come through, but I do recognize this, that, you know, was it Tyson and Randy in their thing talk about, you know, people in the West and they themselves feel like they won the cosmic lottery, you know, that they were blessed to be in an affluent country and raised in a home where educational opportunities were available to them. And, you know, and there is that whole sense of it. You know, the beauty about Mormon stories to me is that they really are stories. And wherever I've landed, it's come out of my biography. It came out of my parents, you know, asking me questions when I was a kid that had me thinking in context. It came out of, you know, spiritual experiences I had on a mission. But, you know, even this whole weirdness of a broad perspective on Mormonism, you know, guess what? That came out of grad school. And very few people go to grad school, you know what I mean, and study religion. And you know, somehow are introduced in a gentle way to where I never really had this angry phase about my religion. You know what I mean? I never really had this sense of betrayal that my leaders, you know, see this and they absolutely try to, you know, point me away from it and, you know, don't peek behind the curtain. We really know that the wizard's behind the curtain, but we're not going to let you know that. You know, I never went through that thing. And I think it's because of, you know, my experiences of studying other religions. And then, you know, Randy and others just saying, you know, why don't you cut slack to your own the way you do others? So if my words and my testimony can kind of open up some minds and perspectives that, you know, maybe I ought to look for the sand and not just the cat crap, and maybe I ought to, you know, cut some more slack with it. I'm glad for that, but know that I recognize that my story, like every other one we've had here, is completely dependent upon my autobiography, you know, the experiences I've had, when I've had them, the type of parents I had, the type of, you know, the lack of damage that I felt like Mormonism has ever done to me. You know, it's never kicked me in the teeth. I mean, I've had bishops and whatnot, you know, that experience with my son and other people that sort of reject any kind of extra learning outside the scriptures, you know, and I may have had people say, you know, I heard you quoting from this outside source and you shouldn't have done that. But, you know, no one's really damaged me in Mormonism. And so I recognize that my optimism and my willingness to stay is partly attributable to that. So
sure.
It's just, you know, that's the beauty of this podcast is, you know, it's all different. And if there's something in there that's helpful to people, great. If not, don't think that I don't want to disparage anyone else's path, and I hope that it didn't come across that I was trying to disparage Randy and Tyson in any way. And I hope if we do a live podcast, I can kind of explain a little bit more about that. So I'll just assert that right now and defend myself later. on anything that may have sounded like I was disparaging by saying, you know, you guys made a pretty hasty exit from Mormonism and straight into atheism, you know. I didn't want that to come across as challenging. I just wanted to be able to say, you know, I understand your path and I'm grateful for your story. And if I had your experiences, maybe I would have gone that direction. But because of my experiences, I still hold open, you know, openness to these realms or interconnection between people that, you know, is that intuition can be a real thing, you know, or something like that where they only see, you know, coincidence.
Right.
Some stuff like that. So anyway, I apologize for rambling on there, but thanks for the chance to tell my story. It's hopefully it won't make people not want to listen to any interviews that I do in the future.
Yeah, well, I guess I want to refer people to your original Stages of Faith podcast on Mormon stories. If anyone ever wants to hear more about James Fowler's Stages of Faith, Dan's done a lot of great interviews on Mormon stories. Dan, we hope we have it back. Hope to have it back. Have you back to do some more?
If somebody wants to not have to listen to a 3-hour podcast to get a feel for me, and maybe you can see me present some other richer or fuller ways of this, feel free to go to the Sunstone website. I'm sure it came out in 2009, but the Pillars of My Faith talk that I gave as I left Sunstone probably does the best job of anything of sort of giving the fullest perspective on, you know, why I value Mormonism and a bit more about my journey. And then also the website Mormon Scholars Testify, there's a brief blurb about there about some of the reasons that I stay Mormon and what I value about Mormonism. So those are a couple of the resources.
All right. Well, Dan Witherspoon, thank you so much for coming on Mormon Stories and for sharing with people your journey.
It was a lot of fun. Thank you, John.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Stories. To comment on this episode or to provide feedback, please check us out at mormonstories.org. If you want to help keep Mormon Stories alive, please consider either making a financial contribution or spreading the word about this episode through your blog, Twitter account, Facebook page, family newsletter, or through your ward bulletin and ward newsletter. Just kidding about those last two. Music on this episode was provided by Clayton and Sky Pixton. Check them out at claytonpixton.com or skypixton.com. That's Sky with an E, S-K-Y-E, pixton.com. Thank you.